Welcome to episode 10 of FemLong. Today I'm joined by Robin Tingley from Glass Sky, and we're going to chat about tips and tricks that employers can use to increase inclusion and diversity in their workplaces. We also talk about quotas for corporate board positions, and Robin talks about lots of different materials, tips, tricks, resources, etc. So those will all be linked below for folks to take advantage of. We're introducing a new segment to the episode as well, so stay tuned after the interview. We're still working on the name, so if anybody has any suggestions, feel free to send us a note. But basically, this will be a bit of a lightning round of current affairs on the topics of gender, feminism, inclusion, diversity, and just things that I've been kind of seeing and hearing about since our last episode. So stick around and then let us know what you think about that segment. All right, so let's get into it with Robin. Robin, thank you so much for joining us today on FemWonk. I'd love if you would just introduce yourself for our listeners.
Thanks very much. Good morning, Katie. Appreciate you having me on your show. So my name is Robin Tingley. I'm the founder and CEO of my company called Glass Sky. Glass Sky is an organization that I originally established in order to help women in leadership. Really reflecting on my own corporate career as a young woman in a very male-dominated industry and the opportunities that I was afforded and how I navigated things, and just really wanting to support the next generation coming up. But it quickly morphed from a focus on gender to also a focus on the millennials and Gen Z workers rising up in our world, because they've got, you've got, this already baked-in mindset of equality. And I believe that if we support you properly, then you get into positions of change-making to drive policies that are progressive, that our world needs.
And why is that vision so important right now in this kind of day and age?
I think we've stalled. I think when we look back at the 80s, we saw, and it's true in New Brunswick with our political officials, it's true when we look south of the border, we'd gotten to a place in the 80s where there was a lot of progress being made, but then we kind of took our foot off the gas. And we, in the 90s and the early 2000s, just kind of let things around gender equality coast a little bit. And I think we regressed. We're seeing the consequences. We're seeing very animated discussions around the need for diversity and some very polarizing right-wing views. We see it definitely in the South. And we need to reinvigorate the discussion, I think, for the wellness of our workplaces and for the wellness of the planet.
I think that that's such a great point, Robin. And I have seen a number of different statistics, just, you know, news articles and things like that, that have suggested that when we talk about gender equality, and particularly in the workplace, there actually has, like you said, been a bit of a regression. And I think it's interesting that studies essentially suggest that a group will only begin to influence decision-making when there's about 30% representation of that particular group around the decision-making table. Is that something that you see in your day-to-day work?
There's no question. That is a statistic that has proven out in research. It's why we see groups like the 30% club popping up in business environment, popping up in Europe around elected officials. The mindset really does change when a minority, it's not just women, when any minority is the only one in the room, they don't behave the same way as when there are others who they know have shared their lived experience and who can reinforce their opinion. Now, there was a great report out of the Obama administration of the women on that team and how they deliberately would reinforce each other's points so they didn't get overshadowed. So they didn't get talked over or forgotten. They would circle back. They would endorse. They would say it again and repeat it to make sure it was given the light of day and the attention that it deserved. And so there definitely is a different dynamic when people are at that 30%, any kind of a minority is at that 30% threshold.
I like that you brought up the Obama administration. I just finished reading Alyssa Mastromonaco's second book, and she was the deputy chief of staff for operations in the Obama administration. And what I have loved about her and her writing is, you know, we talk about role models, particularly in the political sphere and business, et cetera. But when we talk about them, we typically do talk about, you know, the elected officials and the folks that we see every day. But for me, somebody who has worked in the political sphere, but more behind the scenes, it's so refreshing to see role models like Alyssa Mastromonaco writing and putting out content into the world to show what those experiences are like. Because I think that role models, mentors, etc., in every space is so important. And I like the what you mentioned about kind of the supporting and confirmation, because again, I think without that, folks lose their confidence in a sense.
Yeah, you bring up role models, and to me, and it's a piece of advice I give every employer, you know, you can't be what you can't see. So if you've got women in positions of leadership, you've got to shine a spotlight on them. If you want more diversity, whatever that form of diversity is, you've got to shine a spotlight on it, because people need to know that there is a pathway to leadership for them, and they need to see somebody like them, who talks like them, who maybe looks more like them, in order to realize that, hey, that's an opportunity for me. So we've got to use role models more thoughtfully, more strategically, and create pathways for them to even exist. And that's why around the world, especially with corporate boards, you see a movement more and more towards quotas.
That's a great leeway into a question I wanted to talk to you about. I actually have mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast because I still can't even believe that a law is required here, but California, and actually I saw it because you shared it on Glass Sky, that California recently passed a law which requires publicly traded boards to have at least one woman on their board of directors by the end of 2019. And the reason I found that, you know, so stark and I continue to reference it is because, like, again, the fact that we even have to legislate one woman on a board of directors in 2019 shocks me. But I'd love your thoughts on that and kind of the role that quotas and policy can play in that move towards equality.
You know, Katie, you're proving my point that the younger generations are already there, right? It's shocking you because in your space and with your fellow classmates and coworkers, it was something that we've already achieved or that we should have to not think about in these ways. But for the older generations, you know, we came up in a world that was all about meritocracy. So if you work hard enough and if you get the right education and if you build your network, it will come. But the fact of the matter is, it has not come. Only 5% of CEOs are female. Only 20% of global board seats are occupied by a woman. So meritocracy has not worked. Then the conversation has evolved to, let's not set quotas, because it's really more about target building. And I believe in this absolutely. We need to get at the pipeline, the systemic biases, the barriers that get in the way. We've got to set targets around our pipeline. It's going to take a little longer. But ultimately, it's a more organic solution that allows an employer to figure out where it's going wrong and to correct for the longer term. We've embraced that thinking for a really long time, but again, it's not producing the results. So you do see people going and organizations and states and countries moving towards quotas because it is, and it's been called an adrenaline shot. It is that boost. It's that jolt to the system. It's that wake up that forces us to improve very, very quickly. Often when quotas are put in, they're put in with some compliance, some regulations. So organizations need to move. And that's at the board level. I'm talking about quotas at the board level, so your California example. The benefit of that is not only is it an adrenaline shot that focuses the attention very quickly and gets improvement very quickly, but it then forces those organizations to look down at the pipeline and to set the targets and to use the other instrument of improving the systemic issues and the processes. So you kind of get a double whammy effect. I think we need to ask ourselves, how long do the quotas need to be in place for in order for us to work a different way?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think you mentioned kind of the millennial piece. So in my personal experience as both a millennial and a woman, I experienced the stark realities of gender equality or lack thereof, I guess, when I entered into the professional world, when I really entered into, again, a very male-dominated field. It's when I started to really pick up on and see
even the micro sexism or micro patriarchy, if we call it that. And so I wonder, because you do also talk about inclusion of millennials and how workplaces can be more friendly and inclusive to millennials. I'd wonder what your advice is for folks like me who are, you know, the bright-eyed, excited, ready to change the world, and I get into that system that still has so many barriers, and how we can navigate that system in a way that doesn't really put the fire out.
So first of all, I think it's about recognizing the force of your power. Women have 80% spending power. We control the domestic purchasing 80% of the time. Tremendous activism that can be had with our wallet. We are 35% of the small to medium-sized business owners. We're 40% of the investors. We are 45% of the workforce. So it's also about thinking about yourself as a collective and then using that power and using your voice to challenge the system and challenge the status quo. You're always going to have to read the culture of any environment you're in, male, female, millennial. You always have to figure out, watch and listen how things get done. But then it is to not give up. It is to be the change you want to see. It is to bring those ideas forward. And I think you can do that by reminding yourself of the power that you have and also looking for best practices. There are best practices all around the world. Let's just look at quotas. 22 countries have quotas. They have those quotas for a reason. France started at 7.1% of women on boards. They're now at 33% because of quotas. So it's figuring out, you know, what is out there that you can bring into your workplace as a model to create the dialogue and change the views. The other thing that I think you need to request is training for the employer on unconscious bias. I advocate that everybody do training on unconscious bias. We don't understand the biases that we have, and everybody has them, whether it's from your upbringing and the conversations that were had at your kitchen table, your instinct, the media that you consume every day, or maybe some of your cultural frameworks. We all have biases, and it's the number one issue for women.
Yeah, I can definitely, those stats really hit home for me. I would often make a joke with some of my younger colleagues that I occupied the position of chief feminist officer. I would call it the CFO, of course, in the environment, because there I spent so much of my time explaining or pointing out bias or referring folks to references and having those conversations. But again, it does get a bit exhausting. So I love what you said about finding those resources and using the collective power rather than really relying on the individualistic nature of some of this work. And so I like that. I think that's a great lesson for a millennial to take away. And again, a millennial entering into the workforce. We talked about the quota piece, but I'd love your opinion on any other types of, I guess, policy or operational policies that you would see, whether it is from a legislative perspective or internally within businesses, that can help promote equality throughout their workforce.
Yes. So table stakes, got to do the unconscious bias training for your employees. Next, you've got to look at your selection processes. So, for example, some leading employers, and I wish more would do it, are covering up the name, because the name itself may create bias on the part of the recruiter or on the part of the hiring manager. So we see different cultures. We definitely see women end up in the waste paper bin more than men. But we see a bias happening in selection. So more and more, they're either physically, HR is physically covering up the name before they give the resumes over to the hiring manager, or they're implementing software. And you have to be careful with that, because anybody who programs AI knows that a human programs it. And so we've got to make sure it's not programmed with bias at the outset. But more software coming into play to eliminate bias from the recruitment process. The other thing that leading organizations are doing is they will not interview until they at least have a woman on the slate. They will say to the recruiter, don't come to me with an all-male slate. So that's the same kind of thinking that goes into when you do lunch and learns, when you organize conferences, never having an all-male slate. We see time and time again, particularly in the field of technology, let's just look across STEM. You know, you see now a he-for-she movement, where men will say, look, I'm not coming to speak on your panel if it's just all men, because that's one dimension. And I want to be supportive because I know there are women out there who are accomplished and expert in this field too. So let's shine a spotlight back to, you know, my earlier comments around you can't be what you can't see. We've got this whole he for she movement coming where they too recognize the importance of the role models and the importance of women being key in the dialogue. So those are a few ideas, easy ways, easy shifts that employers can try to prevent against bias and support gender equality.
I like the reliance on the hiring process, because one of the things that I've recently learned and found really interesting is that men and women react to language a bit differently. And so kind of flipping it the opposite way, and whether it's using that software or getting folks with expertise in on just how you even write the job description so that it's kind of encompassing what that gender differential language looks like for folks applying for the position, which I thought was really interesting, kind of putting it back out into the very first step rather than waiting for folks to apply. That was something that I found, again, that I just recently learned about and I thought was a really interesting piece.
Excellent point. In fact, some of my clients are using that software, and it is designed to stamp out the gender-biased language in a job description written by a man, job filled by a man, job description edited by a man, you know, with that one lens. And so these softwares really do have a place.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Robin, I'm cognizant of time here, but I did want to give actually a plug to you. You recently published a book, Motivated Millennials. I actually wish I had it here in front of me. I just recently moved, so I don't have it right here in front of me. But I did buy and read the book, and I loved it. And the biggest takeaway for me was actually the developing of the life plan. And why I loved that so much was because, you know, as again, a millennial entering into the workforce, we know that the workforce even 5 years from now is going to be drastically different. And so for me, I really like the idea of creating long-term, short-term, and medium-term goals that are not necessarily, you know, have this job by this date, but rather here are the types of things that I want to do and how can I create the paths and the short-term, medium, and long-term goals to achieve it. So yes, my plug to you. I loved the book. I would recommend it to folks, and I'll actually link it in the description of the episode. But thank you for putting that out. I really got value from it, and I hope lots of other folks are too.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. You know, the book has 25 different exercises. You're talking about one of them. Happens to be one of my favorites, too. I did my first life plan when I was 21 or 22 years old with my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time. And I really attribute a lot of our experiences and success in life and how we feel fulfilled and how we go about life back to that original plan, which we do every year, by the way. But, you know, talking about resources, certainly, you know, my book is designed for new grads and career starters to help them navigate the workplace. Back to the topic of policy and gender, there are two excellent resources that I refer to often that I'd like to tell your listeners about. One is the Unconscious Bias Training. Sheryl Sandberg, in conjunction with International Women's Day this year, through her Lean In Network, issued a free pack for employers to train and have conversations about unconscious bias. It's called 50 Ways to Myth Bust Around Unconscious Bias. And it comes complete with the moderator guide, how do you do the icebreaker, how do you convene a group of people, to the participant handouts that you can easily download and use, to a full 50-page slide deck that has examples of how we manifest and see bias, whether it be according to gender, LGBTQ2, perhaps parental leave that a man is wanting to take and he's experiencing bias. So there's all kinds of examples. And I really encourage your listeners, they can go onto my Glass Sky Facebook page, the link is there, or to just Google it and they will find that resource material. The other piece is a video. And if they look at Georgetown University, 2016 hosted a debate on corporate boards and whether or not we should embrace quotas. Talks about the fact that, you know, 22 countries have quotas, everywhere from 40% to just one woman, and why it accelerates access to corporate positions for women and how it professionalizes the entire recruitment process. And they can easily go online, spend a little bit of time learning about it. Gaston Hall at Georgetown University. And the first speaker is Irene Natividad, and she's a global activist on this front out of Washington, D.C. So if anybody's interested on that topic, there is a richness to be learned by watching that video.
Amazing. We'll definitely highlight those in our description. But Robin, how can folks find you and Glass Sky online?
www.glasssky.org. They will be able to download free reports, figure out where I'm speaking next if they want to come join a conversation, look at some of our latest research, and connect with me directly if they want.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Okay, thanks, Katie. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now.
Thanks so much for sticking around. As I mentioned, this is episode 10, which is a great milestone for us. We have had a number of other special episodes throughout the last few months, but this is episode 10 of our series. So to kind of celebrate that milestone, I've decided to start adding in a section that is basically a current affairs section. What we're going to try to do is a lightning round where I just talk really quickly, kind of under 5 minutes, of topics that I've been paying attention to or that have been flagged onto my radar over the last week or so since our last episode. I don't have a segment title yet for this. I was thinking of some names and everything was a little too basic, really. I was thinking, you know, current affairs with Katie or lightning round with Katie. Those all suck. So I would love to hear your thoughts on what we should call this segment. Okay, so as I mentioned, I'm just going to do a really quick lightning round of things that I've been thinking, hearing about, etc., that kind of fall on the topic of gender, feminism, inclusion, diversity, current affairs. Okay, so the first thing, on Tuesday of last week, so exactly a week from today, the New Brunswick provincial government released their budget. I did do a Medium post about that, so if you want a more in-depth analysis, please feel free to check that out. You can find the link down below. The general conclusion of the piece that I wrote is basically that there are definitely winners and losers in this budget. The folks that we really see left out of this budget are folks in the most vulnerable position. There was a cut in social services and social development department, and we saw those cuts in disability and child protections and in income assistance. So those are really going to be cuts that are felt. And the reality is they didn't need to happen. This budget actually projected a surplus of $49 million. So to kind of save a few million on the backs of our most vulnerable populations, it's not really the type of budget I want to see. Like I said, there's a more in-depth analysis over on our Medium page, so check that out. Second thing, as basically the exact opposite, we saw the federal budget released on the exact same day. For us policy and budget nerds, that was a little bit tough to get both in. But the federal budget was definitely an election year budget. There were also winners in that budget. We really saw lots of stuff for young people, for millennials particularly, for students both entering the workforce and on their way to exit their post-secondary. The other thing I really have liked over the last few years about the federal budgets is their addition of basically a gender chapter. And so what this does is basically do an analysis from a GBA plus, a gender-based analysis plus perspective on the new items in the budget. So that's always a really interesting read. I personally really enjoy that. So if you guys are interested in that, it's really simple to find. And again, it just kind of gives a high level about what the gender impacts are of the initiatives in the budget. I'm really not doing good at keeping this thing under 5 minutes. I still have like five more things. Okay, really quick. The Canada 2020 Network just released a new project called No Second Chances. It's a podcast. And this podcast highlights the women who have held the position of either prime minister, or premier across Canada. There have only been 13 in the history of our country. It's a really great podcast. Would highly recommend checking it out. And we're actually going to have Kate Graham, the host, on our podcast in the next few weeks. The Gender Gap Tracker, Informed Opinions, has started a project with Status of Women Canada called the Gender Gap Tracker, where they basically track who's being quoted in media One of the stats I saw that was really interesting that they just released was that from, I think, October to March, the Globe and Mail only quoted women 22% of the time. I guess the average is about 26% of the time across other other media companies. So I would definitely recommend looking at that and keeping an eye on it. Okay, two last things really quick. I'm not going to be able to do this in 5 minutes. I'm going to need some tips, guys. So let me know what you think of this section and let me know how I can make it better. Just recently saw, finally, On the Basis of Sex, which is the film about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I would also highly recommend seeing RBG, the documentary. Both were quite good. I deeply enjoyed them. What I found really interesting about both was, you know, I think sometimes as a young person, we do have a bit of a hard time recognizing really how far we've come as, you know, the Western world, I'll say. But, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is still on the Supreme Court of the United States, however, has been fighting against gender discriminatory laws for really her entire life, which, you know, she's a bit older. She's lived a long life, but, you know, it's still very recent history. And there's also tons of laws that still exist that don't necessarily explicitly discriminate on the basis of gender, but unfortunately the intent is still there. So I really actually think of the case of legal marriage age. So every state in the US, every province in Canada sets the legal age of marriage. And it would shock you to learn most of them are either don't exist, they don't actually have a minimum age, or they're very low. And we also know that that disproportionately would impact women because women, girls actually in this case, tend to be the folks that are forced into or engage in marriage before the age of 18. So that's just a really quick and easy example of a law that still exists that would kind of be a gender-based discrimination. And finally, a book recommendation. I actually mentioned it just in the chat with Robin, but Alyssa Mastromonaco was the deputy chief of staff for operations in the Obama administration, and she's really funny. She's very self-deprecating, and her most recent book, So Here's the Thing, is fantastic. I would highly recommend it, particularly for folks that are interested in learning a bit more about, you know, maybe how the sausage is made, I guess we'll say. Okay, so what we learned today is that I can talk really fast, but that I'm going to have to get better at shortening that or pick a few key things. So, like I said, I don't really have a title for this section yet. I would really love your feedback, so feel free to reach out to me directly through any means of social media. I would love to hear from you about what the name of this section should be or how we can make it better. And as always, please subscribe to the podcast. If you liked this episode, please feel free to write a review. And also, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at FemWonk. You can email me directly, katie@femwonk.com. Thanks so much.